The man acquitted last summer of murder in the fatal stabbing of Jimmy McGrath at a Shelton House party made a brief appearance last week in court. We spoke with attorney Darnell Crossland, who represents Raul Valley, about the latest in this case and the possibility of a second trial.
All right, well, starting with Friday, so Judge Russo had originally said that he wants some kind of motions and briefs submitted to court for consideration, and that we're going to come back on, as we did on Friday, and just discuss the fact that, the motions are in, what the positions are, and he's going to set a date for argument. So somehow we got to court, and Judge Russo had not remembered that it was going to be just down for setting a date for argument. And then once we spoke about that, he said, okay, I'm on board. And the other thing was, I was supposed to get a copy of the state's response, and they said they emailed it, but it didn't come through. And so they gave it to me in person. And so Judge Russo said, now on June 1st, we'll argue the motions, and that's what we'll do.
Okay. So again, your client was acquitted last summer of murder in the stabbing of Jimmy McGrath. And now what is being discussed? This is looking at different charges.
Yeah. So he was acquitted of murder. And now the state is filed what they call an amended complaint. And so they're trying to move forward on lesser included charges. And where our position is that they can't move forward on lesser charges if those charges concern the same facts, the same issues, because that would be a violation of the double jeopardy clause. That's not permissible. And it's unconstitutional.
And remind folks again what double jeopardy means.
All right. So double jeopardy basically stands for the idea that if you were brought before the court on a particular matter and you were exonerated on that matter, you cannot be put back in jeopardy, to use the same word, again. You cannot be retried again on those same charges. And the reason why this is a little bit different is because although he's not being tried again on murder, he's being tried on lesser included. So there's charges that, such as manslaughter, which is an unintentional killing. But if it's related to the same facts, then you're being put in jeopardy. You're being put in risk of jail time on the same, essentially the same charges.
Okay, so because a jury found him not guilty of murder and intentional manslaughter, but they were deadlocked on lesser charges last summer, they want to look at the lesser charges, but would they again look at murder and intentional manslaughter?
They won't look at, they wouldn't look at murder because they would not be permitted to look at murder. So what they would be doing is looking at lesser charges, but with the same facts. So what the case law is basically saying is that you can't repackage something, rename it, and then have another chance to put somebody in jeopardy on basically what a jury found them not guilty of. And so I'll get a little bit deeper on that. So when the trial happened last year, the defense was self-defense. And so what happens when you raise a self-defense issue is that the burden shifts from the defendant to the government, or to the state in this case, to prove that he was not defending himself. And in this case, they failed to do so. So the jury did find that he was defending himself, and they acquitted him of the murder. So what the state's arguing now is that the jury instruction said that you don't get to self-defense unless they find him guilty of the murder. But it doesn't work that way practically. When the jury went back to deliberate, they had to find that he was justified in using the force to find him not guilty of murder. And what I mean by that is that he stated on the record that he intentionally stabbed and many people because he was defending himself. So they had to find that what he did was intentional. And if they found that what he did was intentional, then they had to find that there was a justification for it. And the justification for it was self-defense. And so if you are justified in using that force, intentional force, you have to be justified in using what they will call reckless force. So they can't move forward on a reckless, saying that they're permitted to do so simply because the jury never had to consider self-defense. They absolutely did consider self-defense. And so So the idea is just preposterous. And so that's what we're going to be arguing on June 1st.
I don't understand. And again, I know, Darnell, you're the attorney here, but I don't understand, I guess, why there needed to be a new court date to come to a resolution. I mean, I know you just you just described it, but I mean, the last time you and I spoke, it was months ago. I don't understand how it feels like the ball was kind of dropped. I mean, I feel like both sides would like to, they want different resolutions, obviously, but I think both sides would like to close this chapter.
Yeah, so the funny thing about what you're asking, and a lot of the media kind of, you know, talked about that, like, oh, you know, the ball's dropped, or, you know, another court date, you know, it's required. It's absolutely required. So like I stated, maybe it was tongue in cheek. When we got to court that day, the judge inquired as to whether defense received the state's motion. The government said, yes, we emailed it. And so we double checked my email system, even trash mail, and there was nothing there. And I said in tongue in cheek, listen, a lot of times people email me and they put two S's in my name, Crossland. And it happens all the time. And I always tell them, drop the second S for savings, because there's only one S in my name. And so whether it was that or whether it was something else, we never got their motion. And so we were going to call them liars. We just said, okay, the judge said, I'll make a copy personally. So the judge went and copied their motion personally and gave me a copy and said, okay, now we all have that. We had a great discussion today to see if we could try to resolve this. And we'll just argue on June 1st. What's the big deal?
I mean, nothing personal, but I think the big deal is if you look at the person who lost their child in that situation, they would like to move on. I think that's the big deal. You know, if you're the McGrath family, they want to move on.
Well, as the father said, this week I'm changing my tone. And so we could appreciate that he's changing his tone. And the tone is not really about scheduling. The tone is that he feels that there should be jail time here. So we could respect that. But, you know, I can't, you know, and I don't want to go tit for tat, but I can't tell you how many times we come to the court and the state or the government needs time to do this or time to do that. But nonetheless, it would just be foolish for me to argue about timing. It's June 1st, and we'll argue as we should. And the judge is going to then need some time to make a decision. So if the judge takes 120 days, which they have, then some people argue that he's taking too long. But, you know, that's what the law says. The judge has 120 days to make a decision.
And Attorney Crossland, not to put words in your mouth, but you still want to avoid going to a second trial.
I think the law prohibits us from going to a second trial. And that's what I'm arguing. We should respect the jury's verdict. You can't repackage things and just keep disrespecting the jury's verdict. There's a thing called finality, and finality will come when you respect the jury's verdict. So since we're talking about timing, if you want to put closure to this, closure will come when we follow the law and we respect the jury's verdict and we move on. Now, if you want closure and you're asking for a new trial could take another couple of years. As been reported in the press, there will be appeals no matter what the judge decision is. But if the judge decides to follow the law on this and find that it's unconstitutional to move forward and it's closed, then we do have closure. Now, the other side likely can appeal. So, closure is again, I guess it's going to be a subjective matter. It's subjective because if the judge closes this and they appeal it, then it's not closed.
Right.
But I think it should be closed based on the constitutional grounds, and we should respect jury's verdicts.
So,
and I would say to you that the case that I pointed out, and I sent you a copy of my motion, it was another case similar to this where the jury found not guilty on the top charge, and then the state brought the same case but focused on a different victim, not the victims, and they focused. And the Supreme Court in Connecticut in 2025 said, no, you can't just now bring the same charge and focus on another victim. It's the same facts, the same day, the same everything. It's closed.
We're talking to attorney Darnell Crossland, who represents Raul Valley, the man acquitted last summer of murder in the fatal stabbing of James McGrath at a house party. He was in court briefly on Friday. His next court appearance is scheduled for June 1st. And Darnell, I know you and your team, you would like to avoid a second trial, bringing up double jeopardy and the things that you highlighted earlier in this conversation. If it goes to trial for a second time, I want to get your perspective on what that is going to mean for your client or mean for this case. And the reason I say that is because this case has a lot of eyes on it. It is, you can literally go back to the first trial and rewatch the entire thing. Every testimonial, every person who took the stand, every argument, the entire thing is on YouTube. You can literally go back and watch it all. And I'm wondering if you think that it's going to be harder to find a jury pool that knows nothing about this case. I mean, do you have any reservations in regards to if you go to a second trial, how the first one could impact it?
Yeah. So definitely. So even if this case was being tried for the very first time, the question is always whether, in fact, there's media coverage that could impact the trial. So that's just all cases. And because they're covered from the time of arrest on down. This one was covered not only before the trial, but all through the trial. As you stated, now the entire trial is online. So I think this case has even more heightened concern of whether we're going to find a pool that has heard nothing about the trial. So you raise a great, great point because, you know, Law and Crime covered it. All the local outlets covered it. And the individuals who testified at trial, I don't think that they want to come back and testify. They were reluctant at the time. They had cooperation agreements with the state that's going to have to be revisited. And I think the jury, quite frankly, found that they disbelieved a lot of those individuals with those cooperation agreements. And so you're going to be reliving that entire scenario again. And now these same individuals are older kids now. You know, they were all like 16, 17 at the time. So these kids, you know, they grow exponentially over 4 years. So it's going to be a very, very, very a huge challenge to find a jury that doesn't know what happened here and to find the same people to testify. Again, we're now more grown.
I think the other thing that is challenging that because we watched this very closely and covered it every single day when it was going on last summer. And one of the things that became a real challenge, you know, I felt for the jury in the sense that some of the people who got immunity deals, I think were very key players in this case is the best way I'm going to put it. And I think it became where you had to look at, you know, is this a one person action or is this multiple people? And I don't mean to talk out of turn for your client, but from a reporter's perspective, it's very hard, I think, from the jury's standpoint to, I don't know if you could pin on one person when especially there was absolutely at least one other person was given an immunity deal and was it seemed very involved based on testimonials from your client as well as this person and other people who took the stand. And those immunity deals stand, right? If we go to another trial, it's not like those immunity deals go away. It's not like we have to refile. They're immune from doing any jail time or doing anything in regards to this case, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Those people will stay forever immune based on those, to me, really questionable deals. And I think the jury found that those deals were questionable. And if they find that those deals are questionable against one, but you're trying to put the hat on someone else, they're going to have a problem with it. And I think that's why when they had to consider whether this was a justifiable act under the self-defense position, they found that. And they found that those deals didn't do for the state what the state thought they would do. And they rejected it 100%. So now you're going to be asking a new jury to say, okay, the other jury rejected those immunity deals, rejected this position that this was an intentional killing that was unjustified because it was intentional. But the question was it justified? And it was justified under self-defense. Now you're going to be asking a new jury to find differently and to contradict an old jury, a former jury. And that's what United States of America doesn't permit. We don't permit that constitutionally. And so that's why you cannot put a new panel in place and ask them to do something another panel already spoke to.
At the end of the day, Attorney Crossland, and I'm sure this is not really a question you want to answer, but I have to ask it. which is, at the end of the day, your client did kill somebody. I mean, that was, he admitted to that. And do you believe that your client should do any time when you look at the fact that there is somebody who was murdered?
Well, the idea here is that we can't sit here today and say someone was murdered when the jury found the person not guilty of murder. And police officers take the lives of individuals all day long, but they are justified in some instances, and we don't call them murders, right? Every death is not a murder, and that's what the law says. And that's why they have these lesser included charges with different names. So in this case, the client was my client, Raul Valley, was fined not guilty of murder. So he didn't murder anyone. Someone lost their life in a wild, crazy gang type brawl that shouldn't have happened.
I mean, he admitted to stabbing and killing him. Yes, he did.
Yes.
So, okay, so we murder. Won't. Okay, so we won't call it murder. But I mean, someone died. So shouldn't your client do some time in regards to the fact that somebody died based on his actions? We don't have to call it murder, but someone died because of his actions.
Yeah, so if someone busted in your house and was trying to harm you or your family, and they died in that event because your family fought back and defended yourself, the answer is, should Melissa be missing her show tomorrow because she's in jail? And the answer is no, because she's justified in defending herself and her family. And why shouldn't that apply here? Why do we pick and choose? You know, then we'll be living in a banana republic. The guy was justified by a jury because he raised self-defense, and they believed him. If they felt that he was not justified, Melissa, they would have said guilty. They would have said you were not justified. So how do we now wake up today and say, forget what the jury said. Someone died, so do some jail time. How is that following the law?
No, I hear you. I think that every circumstance is very different. I agree with you. But I think when you do look at all parties involved, you had three families who had children stabbed that night, and you had one that their child never came home. And I just think for that, I'm wondering, you know, just kind of your thoughts on the fact that no one's going to, I guess, that justice is not going to be paid in some way. And I'm not saying it has to be your client, but I do question that.
Yeah, and I understand it. And so one of the things that we tell the juries, and the judge gives a charge, which is that emotions should play no part in your deliberation. You're to look at the facts, you're to follow the judge's instructions, and you're to come back with a just verdict. And so the jury did that here. And so when they looked at the facts and they deliberated, they found that the killing, which was admitted to, was not unjustified. It was justified. And because it was justified, they said, do you find this person guilty of murder, which is killing someone intentionally? And the jury said, no, we do not. And so that's where we are. And then we fall down to the lesser included. And the case of Yeager versus United States was a 2009 case, Supreme Court case. It says the jury couldn't decide on a lesser charge, so we get to retry them. The Supreme Court shut the door on that and said a hung jury is a non-event for double jeopardy purposes. And so the deadlocked jury cannot be used to water down or work around the preclusive force of the acquittals. And that was Yeager versus United States. So the Yeager case said that if the murder was found, he was found not guilty of that, you now cannot walk around that and then rely on the hung jury's position with the lesser included. So to answer your question is that there should be no jail time here because the law doesn't permit it, and we can't just do it just because we're emotional or we feel that's justice. That'll be us making up justice.
Well, I guess we're going to see what happens next, which the next court appearance is going to be on June 1st. And Attorney Darnell Crossland, I thank you for giving us the time here on WICC.